see if any of the things I have to say make sense to you in regard to what you've written yourself. My hope is that when the day ends, that what you've written yourself will be, in some respect, a duplication, in some ways, of what I will say. What I'll try and do is talk till probably no later than 11:30 or so, and then we can take a break, and then we can come back. And if there's more things that I need to cover, I'll try and do that, but I want to leave some time for discussion. And if along the way something comes up that seems unclear or that would like clarified right on the spot, feel free to interrupt. This morning I'm going to try to make an attempt to describe what mourning is as a process between two interrelated arenas, an internal structural world, a psychological world, an external so-called real world. The afternoon will be more devoted towards how to cope, what to do, and that applies to both personal mourning and if you're in the helping profession and you have to deal with people who are going through mourning, you need some help to that. I'd like to sort of start things off by reading something that Jung wrote. This is from two essays. And here's what he says. A collapse of the conscious attitude is no small matter. It always feels like the end of the world, as though everything had tumbled back into original chaos. One feels delivered up, disoriented, like a rudderless ship that is abandoned to the moods of the elements. So at least it seems. In reality, however, one has fallen back upon the collective unconscious, which now takes over the leadership. And Jung wrote this in 1928, and I think that the piece of music that I played at the beginning is a musical version of what he said. He's describing this sense of lost orientation of a rudderless ship and so on. And really what I think he's describing in many ways is the onset of mourning, when there is a loss of some cherished belief or idea. Jung refers to a conscious attitude, which could also be understood as a way of life, an identity, any number of things. It could also fit the loss of an individual person. And it's going to be this statement, essentially, that I'm going to try to outline and amplify throughout the day. Now, before I get into that, I want to introduce you to the god that we will be studying during the day. This is Shiva. You know, Shiva, the destroyer, whose realm really is mourning and destruction. In his dark aspect, there's also a light aspect of Shiva. And I hope that through the course of the day, those two aspects will come together, and they won't be so separate from each other as it seems.
What is the light aspect?
It's the creator, creative aspect. Now, as the title of this class says, I've chosen the image or the metaphor of finding a thread as an image of mourning and renewal. And one image of finding the thread from the archetypal mythological realm is Ariadne's thread. Some of you may know this story. But as the story goes, Theseus, who was a great warrior from Athens, went to Minos to Crete that was ruled by the king Minos, to try and slay the Minotaur. Now, the Minotaur was the offspring of Minos' wife and a bull. To go back to the origin of all of this, Minos was having a dispute with someone over who should be the rightful king of Crete. And he sort of cut a deal with Poseidon, saying that he would sacrifice a bull to Poseidon if he would decide in his favor. So Poseidon sent the bull, and Minos found it so handsome that he couldn't sacrifice it. As you know, the gods usually don't like this very much when they are promised something and you don't deliver. So Poseidon promptly made Minos' wife fall in love with the bull. And through the
auspices of Daedalus, who some of you may know as the maze builder and the father of Icarus, the wife was able to disguise herself as a cow, mate with the bull, and the offspring was the Minotaur. And the Minotaur was this horrible, devouring monster who would devour criminals and captives that Minos took in the course of his wars and adventures and so on. But Daedalus was employed to build a labyrinth to contain the Minotaur. And Theseus, who was an Athenian, came to destroy the Minotaur because so many of the people who were fed to the Minotaur were from Athens. But he didn't know how to work his way through the labyrinth. And it was Ariadne who provided him with a thread after learning the pattern of the labyrinth from Daedalus, its creator, that enabled Theseus to go into the labyrinth and return. So we can look at the mourning process as a labyrinth that contains a devouring monster. And we can well understand the need for a thread supplied by a figure like Ariadne. Now, the figures in this archetypal drama can easily be converted to psychological dynamics or agencies. Theseus represents the heroic ego, which attempts to deal with the horrific Minotaur, an image of the devouring nature of the mourning process. The ego, as Jung stated in the quote I offered at the outset, as the conscious attitude, has suffered a collapse, and in its loss has been delivered over to the leadership of the collective unconscious, directed by what Jung termed the self, or the architect of personality. The labyrinth itself could well represent the collective unconscious with all of its confusions and paradoxes, and the self, as it appears to the ego, an important part of it. As we know, it's often our unhappy realization to discover that the path we have chosen is ripe with detours and frustrations, and so is mourning. In fact, it's its very essence. Repetition and obsessive thoughts, second guesses, regrets, if onlys, attempts to undo, escape, and bargain, only to lose again and again until we find the thread.